welcome into another episode of the Comics Experience Make Comics podcast. My name is Joey Grow, and I'm joining Andy Schmidt. Hello, Andy.
Hey, Joey.
How's it going?
It's going all right.
I'm joining Andy to talk about making comics. We did something last week where Andy went to Twitter and asked if anybody had any questions. So we got tweeted a couple of great questions that we're going to be talking about over the next couple of episodes. And if you have a question you want to throw at us through Twitter, Andy's at Comic Experience and I'm at Joey G. And you can also email info@comicsexperience.com. But this question came from at Dead Vic Sage. Dead Vic Sage asks, how careful should new writers and artists be about making contracts when making comics with each other? Hashtag make comics. That's a great question. And for me getting into making comics, having a little bit of a background in having contracts for clients that I work with on the video production front, some similarities and some pretty big differences in what was happening. And as far as trying to think through how intellectual property works, how basic contracts should work, how you divvy up any ancillary money if you do have media rights sales, etc. But Andy, I know your background in work for hire and now in self-publishing, you see a lot of contracts that are specifically related to, well, you've seen both sides. You've seen license, you've seen working directly with folks. I don't know if you have a good starting point to come out of the gate for Dead Vic Sage here to think about.
Yeah, well, I think so. I mean, what's nice about Dead Vic Sage's question is that it's really specific. You know, he's talking about a contract between two creative partners, which is good because, you know, we could spend hours talking about contracts, days probably talking about all the different types of contracts. But between two creators working on a project that they're creating from scratch together, there are, you know, before I even launch into this, I am not an attorney and I am not giving legal advice. But from my standpoint, from what I have seen and what I have done, there are a couple of different sort of levers. There's any money that is actually changing hands. Like if somebody's getting paid to produce the art or somebody's getting paid to produce the script, there's sort of the upfront money, upfront costs. The other costs are the costs that you might be splitting between you. So if you hire somebody else and you're paying them to do the coloring, you need to sort of figure out how is that going to be handled in the contract stage. And so there's like the actual, you need to track the actual cash, you know, budgeting the comic, whatever. So I'm sure you've all heard about, you know, creator-owned contracts and work-for-hire contracts. And what usually happens when people are doing contracts on a project is that some people get paid work-for-hire, which means they have no copyright, they have no investment in the IP, that you are paying them and taking the copyright of the work that they are creating. And, you know, often a letterer will do it that way. Colorist, an inker, you know, it just depends. A lot of people will work that way. A lot of people will also refuse to work for hire. But these contracts can get pretty complicated because they can have work for hire components to them. So and so is work for hire, but this person actually has some percentage of ownership in the property, and then who gets what percentage? So those are your levers. Like who's actually getting paid? Who's doing work for hire? Then who's paying those people, and how are they going to recoup those costs, if at all? So those are the first things to start thinking about. The other thing then is how much ownership the people not doing work for hire get in the property. And you know, that's usually just done on a percentage basis. Well, I think it has to be done on a percentage basis, right? So it could be that somebody says, okay, well, if I'm going to pay X amount of dollars up front to get this done, then I want to own more of the property. Like instead of owning 30% of the property, I want to own 45% of the property or whatever it is, depending on how you guys figure that out. So the ownership percentage of the property is in the property being like the overall intellectual property. Like if there is a sequel done on this or whatever, who owns what and has how much say. And then the last component is, you know, all the different rights. There's media rights, licensing rights, merchandising rights, you know, all these ancillary rights that can be divvied up any number of other ways. And so, you know, if you want to maintain a 50-50 ownership maybe with a creator, but you're paying out of pocket, you might get a bigger split on any ancillary rights that get sold. But the thing is, the thing that I would keep in mind is that a lot of people really get focused on like the entertainment rights, the merchandising rights. A lot of people really argue and all that sort of stuff about that stuff. It's pretty rare that that stuff ever comes into play. Most people that make a comic, they make a comic and that's all it ever is. So, and I'm not saying it's not important to think it through. You absolutely should. But, you know, I try to, you know, focus people like, if you're thinking, I'm going to go ahead and spend a bunch of money up front so that I can get this better end of the back end, and I'll on you know, the entertainment rights when we sell the movie or the TV show or whatever, and then I'll make that money back and more. The probability of that going your way is fairly small. It's not impossible, but it's fairly small. And so, you know, the more you pay up front, the more potential money you might get on the back end, but that potential only becomes reality if, you know, if the whole thing goes that way. And you know, there's a lot of comics that are getting made into movies and TV shows, but there are many, many, many more that aren't. but honing this back down to a contract between two people, yes, I think it's important. It can be expensive to have an attorney draw up a contract, you know, especially a really good one that covers all these different aspects. Contracts that I work on tend to get very long because, like I said, there are all these different moving parts, and one person gets paid this, and then that means this, and blah, blah, blah. Like, it all, like, sort of tumbles. And usually I'm attaching, you know, spreadsheets that show exactly what happened, you know, what order does the money, if any, comes in, what order does it get split up and how. Like, it gets really, really complicated, really, really fast. With my contracts, I try to be as transparent as possible with, I'm totally transparent with my collaborating partners. When we then go to a publisher, they don't need to know how we are splitting up the money, you know, between us, or who's paying who what. They don't need to know that. They just need to know who has the control of the rights, who do they need to make a deal with to actually get you know, the publishing rights or whatever. So my overall advice is keep it as simple as it can, because it's going to get complicated all by itself. So try not to make it complicated from the get-go. At the same time, I mean, one of the things that people hire the attorneys for is to think through basically all the different possibilities. Well, if this happens, then X, Y, and Z happen, right? And, you know, this includes things like, okay, well, my partner that I'm signing this contract with all of a sudden can't do it. Well, then what happens? Well, who owns the work that they did do if they had to drop off a third of the way through? Or what happens to that work, or, you know, whatever. So, you know, my contracts have a clause of, if one of us dies, who, you know, where does our part of the thing go, and how does it work from there? And some of these things, you know, I've found good clauses for these, and I can kind of move them from contract to contract. But I don't have a single contract that's the same as another contract, because it's not. No situation is cookie cutter. So it gets complicated all on its own. And, you know, my what I try to do is simplify the deal. So that's it. How important is it? It's pretty important, I think. But, you know, if you're putting a project together with Scotch tape and Elmer's glue, then and you don't have any extra money to spend on an attorney, then do the best that you can. I certainly did that when I was starting off. I had agreements with people that were done, you know, over email. How well are they going to stand up in court? Probably not that well. But as it turns out, I haven't had to go to court over anything, because those projects didn't, you know, wind up being made into movies. As I said, that happens fairly rarely. But you know, at the time I was doing the best that I could, and attorneys are experts on contracts, but few of them are experts on contracts and experts on comics and how they work. And so often when I'm dealing with an attorney, there's a lot of me having to explain how the process works and what are sort of the industry standards of who gets how much and that kind of thing. So like I said, it gets really complicated. And the contract itself can take forever. I just closed a contract with some collaborators, and the contract, after we decided between us what the terms were, who was going to get what, who was going to get paid what, and who was going to own what, and all that stuff, after we decided that amongst ourselves, it took another 4 months, 4.5 months to actually get the contracts done in place. And this was sort of a medium complicated contract. And this was just between us. You know, it's not set up at a publisher anywhere. And this is me working with attorneys and stuff. So like I'm out of pocket already on it. So, but you know, I think it's important and hopefully it'll be helpful. And so I'm doing these contracts on multiple projects, not thinking that all these projects are going to have some major deal attached to them. But on the off chance that one of these deals happens, and I'm not going to be able to predict which one that could happen with, right? Then I sort of look at it as I put this much legal cost out for all of it. And if I can make that back eventually from a deal, an option or something, then that's okay, because then there won't be any question about who gets what, which frankly, kind of more importantly to me than anything really is, will help keep my friendships, because I've seen a lot of friendships get blown up over disagreements after the fact. And so, in some ways I feel like I'm paying, attorney fees and going through all this hassle with contracts in an effort to maintain friendships. I'm trying to do this, trying to be above board and be straight with my collaborators, who are in most cases my friends, because I only want to work with people that I like, which is just me. It's where I've gotten to. I'm trying to not work with jerks. That's my we were talking about New Year's resolutions. That's one of my New Year's resolutions, is cut out working with jerks. I think it's a good goal to have. But yeah. So that was long. That was just me rambling.
I was going to add, getting into comics related contracts for the first time, working with collaborators, the more I've done it, the easier it has gotten for me to plan up front. So like any other kind of skill or experience, the more you do it, the more you come out the other side knowing a little bit better how to streamline the process next time, or how to think about maybe how you even approach another collaborator, or just to cut costs and cut time because you've done it. But to Andy's point, of course, working with a lawyer, working with in some cases multiple lawyers, is always a good option if you can afford it, depending on how many folks are involved in your creative collaboration. They might have legal representation, is what I meant there. But having some kind of boilerplate contract to start from or to look at has been helpful for me understanding the process better. And it might not be the final document that's signed or used, but having something that I have in my possession for the last couple of years that I modify each time and then send to collaborators and have available if they want to send to a lawyer, that's really made a lot of inroads in me, again, kind of having a better foundation and having a more quick kind of think through when I think about potential projects and how to outline them.
Yeah, and just to highlight something that you said there, reading other contracts is really, really helpful. So if you're finding them online, or if you're finding them from books, there are a lot of books out there that have publishing contracts, usually about novels. There are places you can find contracts for media deals like TV, digital video series or whatever. You can find some of those online. You can find all kinds of contracts online. You got to question the source. That's because what law firms are going to be putting their contracts online. But if you can get your hands on some and read them, you'll start to see what you want to do is you want to sort of dissect them and go, okay, they all seem to have a section that, they're very basic. They're all going to have the name of the property, the names of the people. They're all going to have the date that this was signed on. They're all going to have an effective date, the date the contract goes into effect, starts. And they'll probably have some sort of termination date of, this is how, or it'll have a section on how the contract gets terminated, how it ends. What are the conditions that make it end? It reaches 5 years late after the effective date. A collaborator leaves the project. I mean, that again, it can start getting complicated because you go, it'll end if this happens. How does that work? And then there's a paragraph on that. And then, what if this happens? There's a paragraph on that. So that's how these things expand. It's how they get really complicated. It's a lot like a choose your own adventure where you're writing the entire thing. Mm-hmm. And every paragraph you write has three more choices, and then you have to go write three more paragraphs, and they all have three more choices. Like, it becomes this like horrible, like bottomless pit, which is why contracts get so freakishly long.
Right.
So, but they will have these basic points. From the most basic, the names of the people involved, the date, the title, and the IP. There will probably be a description of what it is so that we all know what we're talking about. Then there's going to be the term and the termination. The term is sort of the length and what's included. And then there's going to be, who owns what and who's responsible for what. That's going to be a section. Okay, I'm writing the script. So-and-so is doing the pencil art. So-and-so is then inking the pencil art. Then there's going to be a proposed schedule of, which is essentially the deadlines, right, that everybody's supposed to complete their tasks. So you will start to see as you look at other contracts, and if you're like me, you get like four sentences into a contract and then you fall asleep. But as I've had to deal with them more and more, I've been able to pay attention longer and longer. And, I read a book called, I'm going to turn it around and see if I can see it. I read a couple of books that I found useful in terms of business and in terms of contracts. One was the Small Business Bible. Another was I read a book on intellectual property, which didn't have contracts in it, but it was really, really interesting about how intellectual property law. I'll see if I can find the name of it, but I don't see it on my bookshelf right now. And then I know that the book The Pocket Lawyer for comic book creators just came out. I've started reading it. It has one or two sample contracts in it. And from what I have read, it's got some good points. I may not agree wholeheartedly with everything in it, but that doesn't mean that they're wrong. It just may be that it doesn't sync up with exactly my experience. So, but what you want to do is you want to not just look at one source. You want to try and find, 5, 6, 7 sources and combine those elements. And then, that way you can get something that's pretty tight between you and your collaborators. Like, we know we need to have answers for all these sections. And that way, if you're going to go to an attorney, you can start to, you can go to them and say, this is what I need it to say. And then they can fill in. That might save you some money if you're paying them by the hour or that kind of thing. The other thing is, and I'm sure we'll be offering it again, but it's not currently open for enrollment, but we offer the comic book law class, and every single person that took that, it was just offered for the first time in 2013, and every single person that took it has just been espousing its virtues and how it covered all these things they had never thought about, how it covered things that they knew they'd have to think about but didn't know what it would actually mean or how to talk about it. And it's been a really, really valuable resource. It's one of those classes that I look at and go like, yeah, if I was a 19-year-old college student, I would have avoided this class like the plague. And then after I graduated and was actually working, I would have been like, why the heck did I not take that class?
Right.
Like, it would be the class that you're going to use, the most if you're doing something for a career. Shameless plug.
Yeah, shameless plug, but worthwhile plug. I always break and just kind of looking at the question again to make sure the question's been answered. I always break it down in my head now. Josh Fialkoff said at one of your panels in San Diego at San Diego Comic-Con a couple years ago, it's always a 50-50 split between writer and artist for him and his creator-owned work. And it just kind of stuck with me. You know, that is a mode of doing business. I know that's not quite the question that's been posed, but just in terms of how I approach it as a writer and looking at collaborators and also looking at a page rate, I try to see if I can do that as well, because I know that's going to be an important step. And just where I'm coming from, having done a couple contracts now and putting out a couple books here and there, I thought it was good advice, because it sometimes for me getting into comics the first time, you're like, well, how should deals work? And having that that come from somebody who's had a couple of deals and done all right, always stuck out.
Yeah, I mean, talking to people if you can at conventions or whatever and is great, but I do want to, you know, take just 1 second, because this is already really long, but go back to if you're starting out, you know, if you're working on your creator-owned comics and you don't have a lot that you've published, or you're self-publishing, you know, your first couple of books, focus on getting the work done. Focus on doing that, on learning, on growing your craft. The likelihood that that something you're doing this early in your career is going to blow up is relatively small. I'm not saying don't think about the deals. I'm not saying don't do a contract. If you have the means to do that, by all means, I urge you to do it. But if you're scraping your pennies together, it might just not be an option for you. So, you know, I think the most important thing is for most people is, again, you know, learning that craft, like learning how to make comics. Because if you're not making comics, and if you can't make comics or make comics well, then the contracts are likely irrelevant. But I don't know if that's where. What was the handle again? Dang it, I lost it.
Oh, Dead Vic Sage.
Yeah, I don't know if that's where Dead Vic Sage is in his comics career or not. I mean, you know, if you're a working pro and you've got 8 things out under your belt, then you definitely need to be worried about contracts at this point. Yeah, that's all I got. I think that's everything. It's everything I can cover in way more than the 15 minutes that we promised.
But it's an important topic, and even if it does feel like it was rambly, hopefully folks will think that they had some food for thought that they may not have had otherwise. And it's such an important thing to talk about, and it's such an important thing to talk through. And even just if you do have friends or acquaintances within the industry that you can bend their ear, or like Andy said, at a convention, talking to people about, hey, I'm just breaking in and I don't know how to think about contracts. What do you do? Do you have any resources you'd point me to? And you make sure you have kind of a formed question to ask them that they can give you an answer to and not make it so ambiguous. But that a lot of times folks will just answer, and it's such an important thing that everybody deals with, and like has been kind of the thesis of the discussion, it kind of can vary to the level you need to be concerned about it as you go through your make comics contract career. If you have a question about making comics that you'd like to hear on the show, you can email info@comicsexperience.com like we talked about at the top of the show, or tweet @comicexperience, or you can tweet @JoeyG on Twitter, and we will talk about it here. I think that's a great, and Andy, we can come back and just go another couple rounds if you want, or move into work for hire, or we can talk about working with licensors, and I'm sure there's...
I want to actually talk about making comics next time.
Nope.
We talked about time management, we talked about contracts. I don't want to talk about these things.
Nope.
I know they're important, and I know a lot of people struggle with them, which is why we do, but I want to talk about making comics next time. And since this is this will be premiering soon, Wednesday, January 28th, Creature Cops number 1, Comics Experience Publishing and IDW Publishing combined efforts. Rob Anderson from our Creators Workshop wrote this amazing 3-issue police procedural with hybrid animals. It's awesomeness. So check that out. It's on sale January 28th.
That is the first issue from the Comics Experience publishing imprint, which is pretty awesome. Can people in the store or digitally check it out for sure. Until next time, keep making comics.